the EPA is an agency right now that thinks that they can thumb their nose at you and not answer questions. They should be here.
Congress takes testimony from Shell Oil executives. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 13th of April. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the state Senate fails to pass an expansion of Denali Kid Care. It was a tie vote.
I am voting yes in favor of the 218 pregnant women who will receive health care as a result of this bill passing.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Association of Alaska School Boards, AASB, believes in investing in early childhood development. It can produce great dividends for kids and our state. More information at aasb.org. And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
Shell Oil Company has been waiting 5 years to get permission to drill exploratory wells in the Arctic off Alaska's coast. A clean air permit is holding up development right now, and Shell says it's had enough of waiting. The Alaska delegation agrees that the federal government is holding up the process, but environmentalists and some Alaskans say the system of checks is in place to protect regular citizens. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Republicans in the U.S. House agree with Shell that enough is enough. So an Energy and Commerce Subcommittee held a hearing Wednesday looking at draft legislation that would make it easier for companies like Shell to move forward. The bill would amend the Clean Air Act so that some offshore activity would be exempt from clean air regulations. It would curb the power of the Environmental Appeals Board, an independent body in the EPA. It would also limit to 6 months the amount of time an agency can take to reach a final decision. Shell Vice President David Lawrence says the wait for permits off Alaska is the longest he's ever seen.
No company should endure the delays and waste we've experienced over the last 5 years. Certainly, this is an area that Congress should address.
Alaska's Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan says the state wants to play a role in feeding America's energy needs, and he has grave concerns about the slowing volume of oil in the Trans-Alaska oil pipeline. Sullivan blamed the feds for getting in the way.
The federal government's policies in Alaska have shifted from helping us protect our environment, which we support because we care deeply about it, to proactively shutting down resource development. Now, this is not just rhetoric. As Senator Begich said, this is a widespread problem in Alaska.
Alaska's congressional delegation testified their agreement, with Senator Lisa Murkowski calling the holdups indefensible. Democratic Senator Mark Begich sided with Republicans in saying there's a disconnect between President Obama's goals of energy independence and getting permits. Congressman Don Young says the Environmental Appeals Board is run by, quote, a bunch of kooks, and called for its abolishment. He says the EPA has run amok.
The EPA is an agency right now that thinks that they can thumb their nose at you. I didn't thumb my nose at you. No, they don't care. They can thumb your nose at you and not answer questions. They should be here. Now, I can't quite understand that. Like you say, 17,000 employees? And they could send the janitor down. I think it'd be a good idea.
The EPA did not have an official on hand to testify, but according to a spokesman, that's because committee Republicans contacted the agency late and only sent an official invite after finding out the EPA expert was already testifying at another hearing. Congressman Henry Waxman, the top Democrat on the Energy and Commerce Committee, said the Dems will push for another day of hearings where they can invite more of the guests. He voiced concerns about the legislation and its impact not just on Alaska, but nationwide.
One effect of these changes would be to make it much more difficult for local citizens who are directly affected by air pollution from a project to raise concerns, requiring Alaskans to fly to Washington, D.C., to challenge a permit decision is a real burden. Eliminating administrative reviews creates an additional hurdle for citizens. Administrative reviews are faster, less formal, don't impose fees, don't require a lawyer, and are often conducted by video conferencing.
Rosemary Atungaruk traveled from Barrow to testify about her concerns that minimizing the appeals process and greenlighting Shell will hurt the Inupiaq community to which she belongs.
This bill you are considering to allow the oil industry to sidestep regulations on pollution as set forth by the Clean Air Act will have a devastating impact on my people who have called the Arctic home for thousands of years. If you allow this bill to move forward, you are telling me and everyone who lives in the Arctic that we, proud Inupiats and Americans, are less important than a few foreign-owned oil companies like Shell Oil.
Atungaruk says she's worried the Clean Air Act will be sidestepped with harmful consequences for Alaskans. She says right now, the North Slope oil fields emit twice the amount of nitrogen oxide as the pollution in Washington, D.C., and she says it's hurt her home village of Nuiqsut. She says as a health aide, she saw the number of asthmatic patients skyrocket.
For this village of more than 500 people, a 600% increase in respiratory patients should get some type of response. Yet our voices continue to be ignored. Watching the eyes of babies fighting to breathe tears into you.
While Atungaruk represented the environmental group, the Alaska Wilderness League, another Barrow resident, Richard Glenn, countered her testimony. He spoke on behalf of the Arctic Slope Regional Corporation and said development by Shell will help his people.
Let me be clear. Without development in our region, our communities will not survive. Please allow us to meet our responsibilities to our grandchildren and future generations.
One of the questions is whether Clean Air Act standards would apply not just to drilling ships, but also to other oil company vessels like icebreakers. An Anchorage environmentalist from Earth Justice who testified said he thinks instead of loosening regulations, if anything, Alaskans should have more time to weigh in, since they're the ones who will be most affected. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Voter intent would be the determining factor for counting write-in ballots in Alaska under a bill on its way to the governor's desk. Senate Bill 31 passed the House today on a 38-1 vote. It puts into law recommendations of state and federal courts, as well as the office of Lieutenant Governor Meade Treadwell, stemming from last fall's U.S. Senate race. After that election, Republican candidate Joe Miller sued the state over its handling of write-in ballots for his rival, Senator Lisa Murkowski. Miller's lawsuits failed, but the courts agreed with him that the state's election law is too vague. On the House floor this morning, Fairbanks Republican Steve Thompson said one of the goals of the bill is to limit future litigation over write-in votes.
During the Miller versus Treadwell case, the state spent over $150,000. Senate Bill 31's goal of ensuring voter enfranchisement and putting into statute inclusive rather than exclusive language will protect the fundamental democratic rights of Alaskans who enter the polling booth with diverse backgrounds.
Under the bill, voter intent for write-in ballots is determined by the director of the State Division of Elections, making the same argument Miller made in his lawsuits. Wasilla Republican Wes Keller was the only lawmaker to vote against the bill. He said it puts too much power in the director's hands.
That's a huge responsibility if we get down to one or two or three votes. I mean, it could change the history of the state of Alaska. I mean, one vote is very important. And the problem is we don't define how we determine what the intent of the voter is. And part of the reason for that is it's impossible.
The lawmakers who crafted SB 31 in committee felt it best to leave the responsibility of determining voter intent with one person. They argued the counting of write-in votes is always held in an open process in order to ensure integrity. The bill unanimously passed the Senate back in February. A bill expanding the 14-year-old Denali Kid Care program failed on a tie vote in the Senate today. Denali Kid Care provides medical services to the children of lower-income families and to low-income pregnant women. The measure by Anchorage Democrat Betty Davis replaced a bill the governor vetoed last year because he said it paid for abortions. Six senators who voted for the measure last year voted against it today. In presenting the bill, Davis said by opening participation in the program to those with twice the federal poverty level, it would provide health care for nearly 1,300 more children and about 250 pregnant women. She said the abortion issue needs to be dealt with separately.
A vote for this bill today is saying that you support those children and families that need this service. It's not a vote against or for abortion.
Davis said expanding the program might provide funds for as many as 22 more abortions. Eagle River's Fred Dyson said while the health care program has merit, he cannot avoid looking at the trade-off between healthy kids and abortions.
It's a tough call. I cannot I cannot, in good conscience, vote for the sacrifice of the children. Thank you.
But Republican Liesl McGuire came to the opposite conclusion, supporting the program.
I am voting yes in favor of the 218 pregnant women and yes in favor of the 1,277 children who will receive health care as a result of this bill passing.
The final vote showed all but one of the Senate's Democrats in favor of the bill and all but one of the Republicans opposed to it. Senator Davis asked for a reconsideration of the measure, meaning it could come up for another vote before the end of the session. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, mushers prepare for the Kobuk 440.
It's always been a dream to go to the Arctic to run our dogs, and it looks like the weather's cooperating, and I'm really excited.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by the Alaska Budget Report, providing in-depth coverage for state government since 1991, on the web at akbudgetreport.com.
A draft map is expected by tomorrow. Redistricting board members meeting in Anchorage are working on a preliminary plan that would redraw legislative boundaries around the state. Board members today are looking at various regional concepts. They include potential plans for Anchorage, Kenai Peninsula, Interior, rural Alaska, and two alternate concepts each for Matsu and Southeast. Redistricting Board Executive Director Ron Miller says the board directed staff to incorporate all of the regional plans into a statewide plan.
And that's what the board staff worked on yesterday evening. So the board will look at those plans as they fit into the statewide plan, decide if any adjustments need to be made. Then they will consider today, they will begin discussing Senate pairings and with a goal of having a draft plan with alternatives from the board tomorrow.
Miller says they will also be releasing all of the suggested plans they have received from other groups. The board will not endorse any of those plans, but Alaskans can still comment on them. The redistricting board has had only a month to come up with a draft plan since the U.S. Census Bureau released figures for Alaska.
It's 30 days from the date we received it, so you can start counting on the date we received, 30 days. We counted, and our attorney counted, to be safe, was April 14th. And so that will be released then.
The board will then have another 60 days to come up with a final plan. Public hearings on the draft are scheduled for Anchorage and Fairbanks on Monday and Tuesday. Juneau residents get their chance to comment next Wednesday, April 20th, in the State Capitol building. Then, starting April 21st, board members will split up into teams of two to hold hearings in rural communities around the state until May 6th. Southeast and South Central school districts stand to lose millions in federal funding under proposed changes to the Secure Rural Schools program. The Obama administration is recommending reauthorization of the federal program in 2012, but is proposing to scale back funding for school districts. KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports.
The program has meant big money for Southeast Alaska school districts. Bill Rolfson administers the Secure Rural School Funding for the state.
Several communities, boroughs, school districts here in Southeast receive $1 million or more, or roughly $1 million. For example, Ketchikan Gateway Borough received $1.2 million. Sitka received $1.1 million. City of Petersburg received $1.4 million. City and Borough of Wrangell received almost $1.5 million. So it's a significant amount of money for these municipal school districts.
The program provides hundreds of millions of dollars to rural school districts throughout the country. It also provides federal funding for road projects, fire assistance, and forest restoration activities. About a decade ago, Secure Rural Schools replaced the National Forest Receipts Program, which gave schools a share of revenue generated mainly from logging activities on national forests. Secure Rural Schools was slated to expire this year, leaving many rural school districts bracing for projected budget shortfalls next year. The National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition has been the main group lobbying for reauthorization of the program. Jim French is the group's president. He says the goal was at least to have a mention of the program in President Obama's budget.
We were successful. We do have what's called a mention in the president's budget, and it did have a number attached to it, a $328 million, so we were pleased about that. There are some items, the way it's put in there, that we're hopeful we can still continue to negotiate, but it was our overall strategy and goal to at least start by being in the president's budget, and we've been successful in that regard.
The president's budget reduces the schools and roads portion of the program by 20% next year, another 10% in 2013, and 25% each year thereafter. Starting in year three, any state that would receive less than $10 million from the program would no longer qualify for Secure Rural Schools. Those states would revert back to the old timber receipts program. Rolfson says that means Alaska's share would drop from around $16 million today to less than $1 million.
After about the second year of this president's reauthorization proposal, we might fall below that $10 million threshold, meaning our payment at that point could drop as low as $500,000 or less.
Well, the president's Secure Rural Schools proposal drastically cuts funding for schools and roads. It would double the amount set aside for economic investment and forest restoration projects. French says the National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition is concerned about proposed changes to the allocation split between schools and restoration projects.
For some reason, in the president's proposal, it identified twice the money that is currently in Title II reserved for watershed restoration projects. So someone convinced the White House policy people that that was important. And again, we're not arguing that, but we're saying it cannot be at the expense of Title I, which is roads and schools.
The plan to shift funding from schools to restoration projects is not meeting with the support of Southeast Alaska's largest conservation group. Southeast Alaska Conservation Council attorney Buck Lindekugel says SEAC does not support plans to ramp down school funding.
We think we ought to maintain the pie at the level it's been, so that provides good funding for the schools, providing for the salaries for our teachers, et cetera. And at the same time, a portion of that money goes to restoration and road maintenance. We think those are all important functions, and we think that money goes right onto salaries and putting people to work in the community. So to the extent that the president's budget proposes changes to that system, no, I think we want to see it continue as it has been.
Without the reauthorization of the Secure Rural Schools Act, school districts in the Tongass and Chugach National Forest would revert back to the old National Forest Receipts Program. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan wants to use $11 million in savings from the 2010 municipal budget to fund a variety of initiatives. $7 million would go to lower property taxes this year. Sullivan says his plan would allow a lower annual increase for taxpayers from 1.6 to 1.3%. He says he thinks the Assembly will approve the plan because during the recent campaigns for six positions on the Assembly, tax relief was favored.
Most of them in their comments, when asked what to do with the unspent funds from the 2010 budget, had mentioned property tax relief as one of the things they wanted to see. So I think it goes along with what the Assembly was anticipating.
$880,000 will pay for training 28 new police officers for the city. $84,000 will go toward the domestic violence prosecutor position. And there are funds for 29 new firefighter positions and EMS staff for the Sand Lake neighborhood.
The voters approved an ambulance for Sand Lake, which is underserved by ambulance coverage right now. So this will provide the EMS staff to staff that ambulance.
Sullivan says some of the money will go toward paying off a $3.7 million loan that went to the city to buy some parkland in 2006.
That loan is due this year. There were no provisions made to pay off that loan by the previous administration, so we're having to basically pay off that liability.
Two environmental cleanups will also be paid for with surplus funds, one for lead-contaminated soil in Kincaid Park and another for PCB cleanup on Reeve Boulevard. The Assembly will have to approve the mayor's plan. That meeting is April 26th.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. One answer to our state's declining oil production, Port McKenzie Rail Project. The link from the Alaska Railroad to a deepwater port will bring billions in mineral production and thousands of jobs. This message sponsored by the Matanuska Susitna Borough.
Yesterday, the sun was shining on a handful of elders and about 40 high school students grouped around five seal carcasses laid out on blue tarps at the Alaska Native Heritage Center in Anchorage. KMBA's Jacqueline Estes has the story.
As part of its educational programs, the Alaska Native Heritage Center teaches people how to gather and process traditional food. In a parking lot outside the center, subsistence coordinator Becky Atukiak describes the day's activities.
We bring in skilled elders and butchers to teach these students how to process the seal. The flippers, the skin, the fat, the meat. We've got food barbecuing. We've got fat rendering. We're going to be, it's wonderful. It's a celebration of life, and what a better time than springtime.
Most of the teenagers watch as elders work on the seals. Some help, cutting ribs from the backbone, squeezing the contents out of intestines, or cutting thick fat off the seal skins. Siberian Yupik May Seeluk, originally from St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea, names seal body parts to a helper and to her granddaughter.
Doing like a dissecting thing over here.
What are you taking out now?
Oh, I'm just showing him where the kidneys are and the liver, the stomach. You've got the small intestines and the large intestines. I'm trying to get the diaphragm. It's right here. You see the trachea right here, Maddie?
Two people, both Yupik from Southwest Alaska, are at work on another seal. Jackson Kalistuk, originally from Bethel, helps Maureen Mead, originally from New Napachuk, as she uses an ulu to cut up the seal.
Well, it's been going good. I've been helping her out, trying to get some of the meat off and the bones. Right now she's cutting the seal fat off for okok, also known as seal oil.
Teenagers carry bowls of seal fat and meat to Tlingit Helen Koenig, who is cutting it into smaller chunks to render the fat by jarring or cooking.
There's people that use it to fry up their meat and fish, and some even for fry bread. And we also use it for mix, like a condiment, mix it into your seaweed or your fish. Really versatile, really good for you too.
Athabascan Samantha Adams, originally from Tionic in the Upper Cook Inlet, says she appreciates the learning opportunity.
I think it's really good because we're going back to the old ways and we don't have to sit here and just watch it on TV. And it's a good thing that the kids now that are here are learning how to do this.
Atukiak says the center will hold similar sessions over the summer, teaching how to smoke and jar salmon. In Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
The Kobuk 440 Middle Distance Sled Dog Race gets underway tomorrow afternoon on the ice in front of Kotzebue. The race makes its way through seven village checkpoints. 18 mushers are entered with a purse of $50,000. KOTZ's Susan Bucknell spoke to some of the mushers and has the story.
It's Debbie Modereau?
That's right.
And you're here with?
Here with Mark Modereau, my husband, and wonderful handler. We're taking a practice run so the dogs see where we go after the mass start, just to get let them stretch their legs.
Have you raced the Kobuk 440 before?
I've not, and it's always been a dream to go to the Arctic to run our dogs, and it looks like the weather's cooperating, and I'm really excited. I'm all about having happy dogs at the finish and seeing some new country and people.
Zoya Denier is another 440 rookie this year. Denier has run the Iditarod before, the Copper Basin 300, Tustamina 200, and other middle distance races.
You know, I'm looking forward to this one probably the most because it has such a reputation as being a rugged and tough race.
Hugh Neff and Ken Anderson have both raced the 440 before. Anderson echoes Denier's comments that some years it can be a tough race.
Yeah, I've run it, I think this is my fifth time coming up here. I haven't been here in a couple of years, but it's really nice to be back. Feels like coming home. I really like this community, and the weather's holding, and it should be a fun race.
Have you been here for any of the years of disaster weather?
Seems like most years wind up being disaster weather. No.
I'm glad you can laugh about it.
Seems like at some point, you know, you kind of run into some sort of disaster weather. I seem to recall doing a lot of swimming one year. I think my first year there was real cold weather and some bad storms. It all sort of rolls into one, I guess. But hopefully we, you know, Mother Nature's nice to us.
Hugh Neff says this will be his sixth or seventh Kobuk 440.
Yeah, mostly the team I have this year is just consisting of Iditarod veterans, and three of them are newer that actually did a 300-mile race in Fort Yukon 2 weekends ago. So they looked really good in that race, and I decided to bring them along and show them Kotzebue as well. You know, it could be a little bit warmer in this race because, you know, it is springtime, but I just love the country around here. You learn that you can go fast, but you don't really want to go too fast. Sometimes the dogs really get all amped up because you have a lot of crowd support out there in the villages, and you have to keep them mellow, too.
Really? So the dogs respond to the crowd and all the people?
Oh, yeah, without question. I mean, just look at Lance Mackey's dogs the last few years and John's dogs. I mean, I think the dogs definitely feel the vibe or the energy of people being excited. And so when you come to into a village and all the kids are running around playing or whatever, you know, there's a reason why the dogs' ears perk up when they smell a village. They like to visit just like we do.
Kobuk 440 mushers will line up for a mass start on the ice in front of the post office in Kotzebue at 4:40 Thursday afternoon. In Kotzebue, I'm Susan Bucknell.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly and Matt Miller in Juneau, Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, and Susan Bucknell in Kotzebue. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.